Hi, I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to the Torah portion, Balak, for Friday and Saturday, July 8th and 9th, 2011, from sundown to sundown. This teaching is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this message. Balak, it's Numbers chapter 22, starting in verse 2 to chapter 25, verse 9. The Haftarah is Micah 5, starting in verse 7 to chapter 6, verse 8. And the Brit HaDashah is Romans 11, 25 to 32. Numbers 22:1. Then the people of Israel set out and camped in the plains of Moab beyond the Jordan at Jericho. And Balak the son of Zippor saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites, and Moab was in great dread of the people because they were many. Moab was overcome with fear of the people of Israel. This is not the first time in history, nor is this the first person to be in dread of the children of Israel. Do you remember the Egyptian king, the one that was not called Pharaoh, but it says in Exodus that he was Malek, not Paro, because he did not succeed to the Egyptian throne by proper succession. Now, just hang on to that phrase, proper succession, for a minute, and you might also want to go over to the Esau effect to learn more about this, and also to discover what Barack Obama has to do with Esau here at the end of days. Now, that phrase, proper succession, has to do with a little rabbit trail that I'm going to go down here for just a minute. That king in Egypt was an Edomite. He was not a pharaoh in the line of pharaohs, but he oppressed the children of Israel because there were many of them. And he said that if they got mad at him, you know, they would fight against him. Well, that Egyptian Malek, that Egyptian king, was not given a name in Scripture. But in this week's Torah portion, there is a king with the same attitude as the Egyptian Malek who does have a name, and that name is Balak. Now, again, that phrase, proper succession. If I say Balak three times fast, it sounds like Barack. Now, how did Barack become king of America? You know, he certainly is not the rightful president. He is a king like the king of Egypt that was not proper, was not a pharaoh. How did that happen? Well, the same way that the Edomite king of Egypt became king. He usurped the position. Now, there are many scenarios in history that talk about how this could have happened. A couple of them have to do with a magician priest and also with the pharaoh's accountant. Now, the story goes that the rightful pharaoh was murdered. Do we know any Edomites capable of murder? Oh, well. The pharaoh was murdered, and perhaps someone, you know, like the chief magician or the accountant, muscled his way in and became Malek, king, instead of Paro, pharaoh. However he got there, this new king was a usurper and an Edomite like Barack Obama. And the interesting thing is that there is something going on in our world today that is very much like what went on in the days of Balak and Balaam in this Torah portion. But we're going to have to listen all the way to the end in order to find out what that is. Numbers 22:4. And Moab said to the elders of Midian, This horde will now lick up all that is around us as the ox licks up the grass of the field. So Balak, the son of Zippor, who was king of Moab at that time, where is Moab today? Well, it's part of Jordan along with Edom, that's Esau's territory, and Ammon. Verse 5, so Balak sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Petor, which is near the river in the land of the people of Ammah, to call him, saying, behold, a people has come out of Egypt. They cover the face of the earth, and they are dwelling opposite me. Now, your King James Version says, the children of his people. The English Standard Version says, the people of Ammah. NetBible.org says that Ammah was a place in Syria. Now, Balaam was at Petor, which was in the Hittites region in Mesopotamia at the time when Balak called for him. However, we now, here at the end of days, see that Jordan, Syria, and some of those regions in the Mesopotamia are all connected to each other, aren't they? Now, who is Balaam? Let's go back to Genesis for just a minute. Genesis 36:32. Bela, the son of Beor, reigned in Edom, the name of his city being Dinhabah. Now, Numbers 22:5 says that Beor had a son called Balaam, or Balaam. And in Genesis 36:32, it says that the son of Beor was Bela. Well, Beor either had two sons, one named Bela and one named Balaam, or Bela and Balaam are the same man, as the sages teach, that Bela and Balaam are the same man. And, you know, I like what Eddie Chumney and Brad Scott and all those fellas say. You know, I agree with the sages when they agree with me. I believe that Bela and Balaam are the same man, and that Balaam, the one in this Torah portion, became the king in Edom before he was killed later on in Numbers 31. Edom and Moab, as I said, are both part of Jordan today. Now, going back to the connection with Barack Obama and to the Edomites and what's going on in the world today, if you Google Jordan, Abdullah, Obama, you get 18,600,000 hits. Why? Well, today's prominent Edomite king of the world, Barack Obama, has met with King Abdullah of Jordan in person and has had more conversations by phone and other means than with any other ruler in the Middle East. Even the Saudi king that seems to, you know, everybody seems to think Obama and the Saudi King Abdullah are such great friends. No, nope. Obama and King Abdullah of Jordan are closer to each other than any two rulers having to do with the Middle East. Well, why would this be? Well, it's because we're getting ready to see a repeat of this Torah portion here at the end of days. And again, you have to listen all the way to the end to see what the Edomites are up to. But the fact is that this problem is already happening among believers in Yeshua. Of course, it won't work, but we have to be aware of what is coming. So hang in here with me. Numbers 22:6. Come now, Curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them from the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. Now, you know, that harks back to when God said to Abraham, whoever blesses you, I will bless, and whoever curses you, I will curse. But here, Balak is saying this of Balaam, like Balaam has the ability to bless and to curse in the same way that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob does. Verse 7. So the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fees for divination in their hand, and they came to Balaam and gave him Balak's message. Or how about if we were talking in modern times, they came to Jordan and gave him Barak's message. Just a little thought. And he said to them, lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me, as Jehovah speaks to me. So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam. And God came to Balaam and said, who are these men with you? Now, we all know that God already knew who those men were, but he needs Balaam to make the declaration. And Balaam said to God, Balak the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying, behold, a people has come out of Egypt, and it covers the face of the earth. Now come, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to fight against them and drive them out. God said to Balaam, you shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. Now, Balaam was not only the first king of Edom, but he was also a false prophet. His name, among other things, means destroyer. Now, notice that Balaam talked with God and God answered him. Now, this has been a point of debate for thousands of years. Some say that Balaam had a sort of relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob because of this verse, Numbers 22:18. And Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, if Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord, my God, to do less or more. Well, I disagree with those sages and scholars who say that Balaam had a right relationship to Jehovah, and here's why. Do you see where it says that Balaam said, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord, my God? Well, in the Hebrew, the word my is not there. What it really says in Hebrew is Jehovah Elohim. There is no my. The translator translated Elohim as my Elohim, my God, and he did not italicize it. You know, the italics means that it was added. In this case, there is no my, yet they put it in there. In fact, of the 202 times that the word Elohim appears in Scripture, 138 of those times someone translated my in front of the word Elohim, and my being a min, M-I-N, or mine, which is in Strong's, and it's Strong's number 4480, and it doesn't even mean my. So what was the translator doing? Okay, that's just a little rabbit trail. So Balaam never said that God was his God. Now, this is not some pensive tale of a believer in Jehovah who just gets off track. It is a warning about a group of people represented by Balaam who will try to curse Israel here at the end of days. And number two, Balaam was an Edomite through and through, who only knew about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But what Balaam really had going was that he was what we would today call a Muslim. Yes, Islam goes all the way back there and beyond, right back to Babylon. Now, you know, Muslims have no relationship with the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They only have their Abrahamic ancestry and nothing else. However, they do know about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, even though they refuse to have a relationship with him. Otherwise, they would not be going around the world saying that the God of Esau is greater than the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They keep declaring that, don't they? Well, apparently, that means they know about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, Muslims and all other pagans understand some things about manipulating the spirit realm. And one of the practices in paganism is that you need to know the name of the God that you want to manipulate. You see, pagans believe that all gods must do your bidding if you know that god or goddess's name. Well, here in Numbers 22, we learn that this understanding of pagans is a lie. Balaam likely did know either the name or a name of God, but he soon found out that he did not wield power over the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. God wielded power over him. Well, Balaam sent Balak's men away, but other men returned again to offer him a huge reward if he was successful in cursing Israel. Balaam's name is also associated with gluttony or greed. He was greedy and decided to ask God about doing this again. This theme is the same one as the Korah Torah portion, isn't it? How is that? Well, because Balaam is testing God to see who God will choose. Will God choose Esau or Jacob? You know, Korah wanted to know if God would choose him or Aaron. No, isn't it something how people find ways to test God on the same issue over and over, but in different ways? Well, Balaam is pulling a Korah here. So God does the same thing here in this Torah portion that he did in Korah, which is to very clearly show who his choice is. Now, he tells Balaam, oh, go ahead, but be careful to do only the things that I tell you to do. Numbers 22:20. And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, if the men have come to call you, rise, go with them, but only do what I tell you. So Balaam rose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the princes of Moab. But God's anger was kindled because he went. And the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as his adversary. Now he was riding on the donkey, and his two servants were with him. So here we see that God's anger arose because Balaam showed his clear intention to poke God in his eye. Balaam represents those who will curse God's people, whether they are Christian Edomites cursing God's people, Jewish Edomites cursing God's people, Muslim Edomites cursing God's people, or Gentiles with no affiliation to either Edomites or Hebrews. Now, coming down to the end, even the Gentiles are going to be made to choose between being an Edomite or a Hebrew. Why is that? Because the battles at the end of days, during the tribulation, during the first half of the tribulation and during the second half, which is the Great Tribulation, have to do with the fight between Esau and Jacob. That's why. Balaam is a curser of God's people. That is why God became angry. Not because Balaam had a relationship with God that was about to go awry. No. Balaam did not have a proper relationship to God. Starting in verse 23, we read about the talking donkey and the angel of Jehovah, which is always Yeshua. The angel of the Lord, the angel of Jehovah, is always Yeshua. Numbers 22:31. Then Jehovah opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of Jehovah standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand, and he bowed down and fell on his face. Well, there is coming a time when the Edomites that survived the burning of the house of Esau will fall on their faces and worship Jehovah, Yeshua. Yet, just like Balaam, they will continue on their way and proceed to try to curse Israel. But, just as was the case then, it will be the case this time that Yeshua will give our enemy passage to come to us wherever we are in the camps for the purpose of blessing us, even though our enemy means to curse us. They will come against us, but it will end up being a blessing for us. Now, why would this be? Well, you remember that at the start of the Great Tribulation, God said that judgment starts in the house of the Lord. And he said he's going to meet with us in all of the assemblies where we are. And he's going to meet with us face to face and judge us. And he is going to separate the rebels from among us. Well, after we have been judged, we are going to need to be blessed. And so they're going to come to curse us, but we are going to be blessed by them. So this is a prophecy about something that's going to happen, not only in the Great Tribulation, but it's also a prophecy about something that is going on right now. And we're going to see different levels of this prophecy. We all know that scriptures have many levels and many fulfillments. And we're getting ready to see a fulfillment of it now, which we are seeing, and a fulfillment of it again in the Great Tribulation. Now, most of us are familiar by now with the blessing that Balaam spoke over Israel unintentionally. It says, "How lovely are your tents, O Jacob," right? But we often focus so much attention on that part that we miss the rest of it, which is further on in Numbers 24. You see, at the end of the blessing to us is a curse to those who oppose God at the end of days. We ought to be interested in Balaam's blessing. It is a blessing that has gotten the children of Israel through thousands of years, and it foretells a bright future for us. But we need to have faith in the curse that was spoken as well. The knowledge of the end of our enemies spoken about in the curse will sustain us when we are being attacked by them. Let's go to Numbers 24:15. And he took up his discourse, that's Balaam, and said, "The oracle of Balaam, the son of Beor, the oracle of the man whose eye is opened." He's referring back to when he saw the angel of Jehovah. "The oracle of him who hears the words of God and knows the knowledge of the Most High, who sees the vision of the Almighty, falling down with his eyes uncovered, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near." Now, what does that mean? That means that he's seeing Yeshua, the angel that confronted him with the donkey on the path to go and meet up with the children of Israel. He's seeing the angel of Jehovah, Yeshua, but he's seeing him not now, he's seeing him in the future. He beholds him, but he is not near, he is in the future. "A star shall come out of Jacob," that's Yeshua, "and a scepter shall rise out of Israel," that's Yeshua, "and it shall crush the forehead of Moab, and break down all the sons of Sheth, and Edom shall be dispossessed, Seir also, his enemies shall be dispossessed. Israel is doing valiantly. And one from Jacob shall exercise dominion and destroy the survivors of cities." Then he, that's Balaam, looked on Amalek and took up his discourse and said, "Amalek was the first among the nations, but its end is utter destruction." And he looked on the Kenite and took up his discourse and said, "Enduring is your dwelling place, and your nest is set in the rock. Nevertheless, Cain," that's, this is the sons of Cain, Kenites, "shall be burned when Asher takes you away captive." And he took up his discourse and said, "Alas, you shall live when God, who shall live when God does this? But ships shall come from Kittim and shall afflict Ashur and Eber, and he shall come to utter destruction." Then Balaam rose and went back to his place, and Balak also went his way. Well, you know, these guys, that there was just nothing more to say. Amalek, Ken or Cain, the Cainites, and the Moabites, and all of those folks, those are Edomites. They are descendants of Esau. So they had nothing else that could be said, because they knew that at some future time the curse was going to come back on them and they were going to be destroyed. Now, I've been talking about a curse that is coming to us here at the end times, and it is already here. Numbers 25, verse 1. "While Israel lived in Shittim, the people began to whore with the daughters of Moab. These invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel yoked himself to Baal of Peor," and I don't even want to talk about that god. He's a real stinky god. "And the anger of the people was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, 'Take all the chiefs of the people and hang them in the sun before the Lord, that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel.' And Moses said to the judges of Israel, 'Each of you kill those of his men who have yoked themselves to Baal of Peor.' And behold, one of the people of Israel came and brought a Midianite woman to his family in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the whole congregation of the people of Israel while they were weeping in the tent entrance of the tent of meeting. When Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose and left the congregation and took a spear in his hand and went after the man of Israel into the chamber and pierced both of them, the man of Israel and the woman, through her belly. Thus the plague on the people of Israel was stopped. Nevertheless, those who died by the plague were 24,000. Now, notice Phinehas. He is a Levite. He is of the line of Aaron the priest. Now, I've been teaching in recent months that many people, especially in the Hebrew Roots movement, are being trained as Levites, as spiritual priests. Now, the Levites are not necessarily all priests, but I believe that as spiritual priests, we are going to be called to take action of this kind. When we are captains over tens, over fifties, over hundreds, over thousands in the camps, we will be called to take care of situations like this. Just like in the days of Korah, when those came against the leadership, and they will come against the leadership in the camps, it's up to us to be trained and to know how to properly respond to the different situations that are going to come up. I believe that here in the end, that this is partly what we're learning in these Torah portions, are the proper responses. Phinehas has the right idea here, to just go kill these people. It's not about something that was going on in the camp, it's about something that was going on in the tabernacle. They went inside the perimeter of the tabernacle and were sinning in there. And Phinehas went in there and killed them both to stop the plague. You see, the sins that go on inside the tabernacle, those sins are the responsibility of the priesthood. We learned that in Korah in Numbers 18. Go back and read that if you haven't had a chance to. The Levites, who were not of the priesthood, also bore responsibility for the sins of people who sinned, you know, among them. So the priesthood was going to be held responsible for allowing this sin to go on inside the tabernacle. That's why Phinehas had to get up and kill these two people, so that he could absolve the priesthood of the sin of that. Now, the curse that is already among us, it has to do with the marriages between Christians and Muslims. There are even marriages between Messianics and Muslims now. But even worse than that, there is now a marriage going on between Christianity and Islam called Chrislam. This is abhorrent, a travesty, and the greatest lie of all that teaches that the God of Esau is the same as the God of Jacob. Chrislam is the most panim in your face mixing of evil with good that has ever existed on earth. Balaam is riding his donkey through God's assemblies. Those who have no relationship with Jehovah, like Balaam, who had no personal relationship with Jehovah, are falling prey to this curse of Chrislam. By the way, you do know that the word Allah in Hebrew means curse, right? Shabbat Shalom.